Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies.
Starting Balance of Nature, I felt it the first month. I felt different. It made such a difference that now I wake up, my head feels clearer, I have more energy. Very rarely does my body cramp up anymore. It's the best thing. It's just amazing. I don't know what to say. I just would not be what I am today if I didn't start Balance of Nature.
I'm planning on taking this the rest of my life because until I started taking your stuff, I never took as many fruits and vegetables in a day as I get through you guys. You know, I'm very, very, very satisfied.
My pain and my, it went away. I swear to you that that's the truth.
When you call, use discount code DJV, and we'll take 35% off your first month's order and ship it to you free. Call 800-246-8751 or go online to balanceofnature.com and use discount code DJV.
Time for us now to bring in Dr. Ken Kronhaus. I'm Doug Steffen. Dr. Kronhaus is an expert when it comes to your heart, your circulatory system. He's a cardiologist, practices preventative cardiology at his clinic, Lake Cardiology, down in Central Florida. He's here with us, as he usually is, to go over some of the results of studies, work done by various institutions, reported on in the journals, so we can get an interpretation that will help us understand how this impacts you and you and you. So we go through a number of these things, half a dozen of them each week, and then we have some questions from you. If there's time, send the question along to me. Twitter account is at Doug Steffen, S-T-E-P-H-A-N, or you can send it to me, Doug, at DougSteffen.com. Dr. Ken is somebody that I highly regard and respect. He's done a lot of work, and I think maybe it would be good for us to start with your specialty, cardiology, blood pressure issues, that sort of thing. So there's some news this week on how genetically something can change that will make your blood pressure spike. This is related to using salt, I'm guessing, yeah?
Well, it's about how some people are incredibly sensitive to salt regarding their blood pressure, and some people can eat a lot of salt and it has no effect. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning to understand this difference. This comes out of PLOS-1 this week. There's a natural gene variation that occurs in 48% of people, increasing a person's chance of having blood pressure that's sensitive to salt. The gene variant causes sodium or salt transport called NBCE2 to overwork, bringing too much sodium filtered in the kidney back into the body, particularly after a high salt meal. That means that consuming too much salt could be especially dangerous for people with this gene variant. About 3 out of 10 people are sensitive to salt, and their inability to eliminate excess salt puts them at increased risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney failure, and blindness. So this is nothing to sneeze about. About 14% of people can even have normal blood pressure and still be salt sensitive. Having too much sodium in the body, Doug, causes the body to retain water, which can raise blood pressure and significantly shorten one's lifespan.
Okay, so let's do the chemistry. You can be the chemistry professor. There, say it again, Doug. You can be the chemistry professor,
okay,
Dr. Ken. Sodium and its interaction with the other chemicals in our body, because that's really what we're talking about here, understanding that our body is made up of mostly fluids, and it's mostly the, you know, when you have high school chemistry, you learn about the properties of oxygen and nitrogen and all these other things. And so sodium is one of the things that we have as a part of our body's inner workings. So does this just give us too much and it creates an imbalance? What effect does the sodium have on the other chemicals in our body?
It's all about the tone. Remember, if you go back to tonicity in high school chemistry, and what the sodium does, it's an ion and it pulls water. And the more tone, the more of these ions that you have, the more water gets pulled. It's like water runs downhill. It runs from low tone to high tone downhill. And if you have more sodium, you're going to pull more water. So you don't get rid of the excess fluid when you have this excess sodium.
But yet, we are told that we need to drink more water. So we're drinking water, but it's not the sodium keeps the water in our system versus just having it in our system and we get the benefit and we pee it out if we're not using it?
Well, let me take a little exception to what you just said.
Okay.
As long as your thirst mechanism works, you want to drink when you're thirsty.
Yeah.
Because you can drink too much plain water. I can't tell you how I see several people a week who are weak and dizzy because they're just drinking excess plain water, what doctors call free water, and they're diluting their tank of fluids. And you need to, first of all, as long as your thirst mechanisms work, drink when thirsty, and you don't want to drink a lot of excess just plain water because it won't stay in the tank. It has to have the tone of blood or it just leaks out of the pipes.
All right. So, yeah, I think that clarifies that a little bit.
That's the whole idea behind sports drinks.
What? The things that add electrolytes?
Right. You want to drink fluids that have similar tone as your blood to keep it inside the vessels, or it will leak out into the tissues and not keep the pipes well hydrated. If you're very thirsty, plain water works.
All right. So there's no sodium in electrolytes. Is that what you're saying?
There's no sodium in plain water. But there's plenty of sodium in an electrolyte balanced liquid. Like if you drink a sports drink, that's where there's plenty of ions, and the ion content matches the ionic content of blood, so it stays in the pipes.
So the sodium, but now I'm confused. You want it to stay in the pipes because you want to hydrate your body.
Correct.
And sodium helps to keep it in our pipes.
Correct.
So
but you don't want to overdo it.
Yeah.
You can overdo it, and it draws. Not only does it stay, if you overdo the sodium, not only will you keep the fluid in the pipes, but you'll draw fluid from outside the pipe back into the pipe if it's too concentrated inside the pipe.
But it is something in terms of what is in and out of the pipe. The sodium is we need some of it. In our system, we just have to.
You need
every
some of it,
and different.
You need to know by following your blood pressure yourself at home when you're fully relaxed, at least 5 minutes with an upper arm calibrated device. If that blood pressure is too high, you need to try to eliminate sodium, limit sodium. We now recommend 2.3 grams for everybody per day, which is not very much sodium, and 2,300 milligrams. It's very little, and if your blood pressure is going up and up, you need to try and get the sodium down and see if that helps.
All right. Got it. By the way, I just wanted, because Barbara Bush passed away this week, she died of COPD. She stopped smoking a number of years ago, so is it that what the impact of smoking does to you stays with you? Over the years, I remember talking about my mother and her dying because she smoked and her lung looked like a burnt sponge. But then you see some things where you're told by doctors, if you quit smoking, your lungs have the capacity to fix themselves, to cleanse themselves and get that. But I thought that the tars and the things that were in the cigarettes that would plug off the little bacilli, whatever they call them, in there, and they can't recover. What's correct?
All of the above. Remember, she died at 92.
Right.
And which, so she had some very good benefits of quitting and made it to 92. But when you quit, you definitely help the situation, and there is some healing, but there's also some damage. It's a balance. Mm-hmm. It's good to quit. It does help. And Barbara Bush lived a long life.
Yep. So congratulations and let's move on. Yeah. It was a good story, though. She was quite an interesting lady. Very positive, I think. I found her to be very positive. All right. Ken Kronhaus, let's get to one more of these items that you've studied this week. White coat hypertension. What the heck is that?
This comes out of the New England Journal of Medicine. Very important this week. White coat hypertension, what it is, it occurs when the blood pressure reading at the doctor's office is higher than it is when checked at home or other settings. Doug, white coat hypertension, it affects a whopping 30% of Americans. It was once thought that it was just the temporary stress of being at the doctor that caused the spike, and that it did not indicate a bigger problem. But the news this week out of the New England Journal of Medicine is that the risk of death is nearly twice as high for patients with white coat hypertension compared to patients whose blood pressure is normal when taken at the doctor's office and at home. However, blood pressure measurements taken at home regularly are a stronger predictor of cardiovascular death than doctor's office readings.
Because you're in your own setting. You're kind of normal that way. Makes sense. All right, let's get to, I would like to have a little bit of time to teach people about the various types of, I don't know what to call them, poisons. The bacteria that's dangerous, E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. There are others, but those are the most common. I was going to say the most popular, but they're the most common. Would you care to explain? I guess in my mind, Ken, because there have been several recalls for lettuce and eggs and all that stuff. And we have recalls. It doesn't seem to be a week that goes by. There isn't some kind of a recall. And so in my understanding from the farm, because we worried about E. coli and Salmonella and Listeria in the milk, what people, if they had a weak immune system, how they would react. It's sort of, when you hear stories about the stomach flu, a friend of mine who was very sick for, I remember talking about hiccups and stuff, what he had was a food poisoning. And so it presents as the flu bug, or are they one and the same? When we're talking about bugs, these E. coli and
right. Well, the flu is a virus, and the other bugs that you're talking about regarding these recalls are from bacteria. Let's go through them. The one of most concern to me is the egg recall from Salmonella, that over 200 million eggs have been recalled across 9 states due to possible Salmonella contamination. Let's talk about Salmonella. You were asking the symptoms of Downing Salmonella. It's diarrhea, stomach cramps, and fever. Usually you don't get blood, as opposed to other bugs that we're going to talk about in the stool. So to play it safe, do not eat foods with raw or undercooked eggs unless they're pasteurized, and keep all eggs refrigerated at 40 degrees or cooler to keep bad bacteria from growing.
You know, this just underscores and emphasizes how bad it is to eat anything that isn't cooked these days. I do not hold with eating sushi. I think sushi is a very dangerous engagement because you never know what you're going to get. And I hear time after, I love sushi, it's yummy. And time after time, the same people will get violently sick from eating the stuff because you don't know where it comes from. The fish, the salmon, or whatever else the stuff is made from comes from questionable sources, especially if it's Asian. You don't know what you're getting, and you're foolish if you don't cook your food. And now this underscores with eggs, I've always said, my kids have always laughed at me because I tell the waitress, if I'm going to have eggs, I want you to cook them, kill them, cook them, kill them, make them hard as a rock, do whatever you have. I want them well done. And because I know, having been through this on the farm, seeing what happens with people who have Salmonella exposure or E. coli, this is bad stuff, and it can knock the hell out of your body.
It really can, and it can get into the egg in two ways. The rodents get into the hen's ovaries or just rolling through the dirty, contaminated surfaces where the processing occurs. It easily gets through the thin shell.
Well, as a kid growing up on the farm, I'll tell you that when the poop comes out of the same place the eggs come out.
Correct.
So when you go, when I was a kid collecting eggs in the hen house, there was always poop on the egg. And you always washed it off, cleaned it off, and it was fine. But you don't, you got to cook it. You can't eat. Some people, my friend Jack Stockwell, his wife loves to make me raw egg smoothies. I won't drink. They're awful. Well, you won't taste it in this.
They love you?
They do love me. But yeah, Jack will always say, I'll take those. They're great for it. I'm not buying that for a second.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-355-1493. 1-800-355-1493. That's 1-800-355-1493.
The services of Ken Kronhaus at Lake Cardiology, his clinic down in Florida, only a phone call away, expertise that he has that people come from all over the country to get. You can call his office, 352-735-1400. If you like the way he deals with some of the issues that we're talking about, you think he'd be helpful, he's got a great bedside manner. People come to him, he's in the office 12 hours a day, it seems 7 days a week. Always there to help. 352-735-1400 at Lake Cardiology. All right, we're discussing the various outbreaks of food poisoning caused by bacteria, salmonella, listeria, E. coli, trying to get not a final explanation, but something that I talk about a lot because I do a lot of work in the food department, the family farms and food and things that happen on the farm or you get when you go to the grocery store, the foods. And that's basically what we're talking about here. Romaine lettuce, eggs, happens with milk sometimes. It could happen with anything because especially listeria is the most pervasive of the three. It's everywhere and it's very difficult to get rid of. I can tell you that from my own experience on the farm. We could find it in the traps, the drains, at sinks. On the equipment, it's just really a tough thing to get rid of. And they give you... So you were talking about sometimes there's blood in the stool. Sometimes it depends on how severe. Can all three of these bacteria cause that to happen?
Well, let's go on. We talked about one already, salmonella. And
yeah.
Let's go on to which usually does not have the blood in the stool, but let's talk about the one that usually does have the blood in the stool, and it's in the news. We talked about eggs, and the other food that's in the news this week is romaine lettuce. This is an outbreak of E. coli illness that's tied to tainted Arizona romaine lettuce, and this outbreak just continues to expand. 53 people so far have been reported ill. Doug, the illnesses have been identified as linked to a particularly virulent strain of E. coli, the so-called 015787. Cases have now been reported in 16 states, although no deaths have been reported. An amazing 65% have been hospitalized. Usually it's about 30% for E. coli, including five who developed a type of kidney failure called hemolytic uremic syndrome. This is not a good thing you want. So chopped romaine lettuce from the Yuma, Arizona growing region appears to be the one contaminated with this E. coli and making people sick. Before buying romaine lettuce at a grocery store or eating it at a restaurant, confirm that it is not chopped romaine lettuce from the Yuma growing region. If you can confirm the source of the lettuce, do not buy or eat it. And you asked me about E. coli illness. Let's talk a little bit specifically about E. coli illness. It can be very serious, even deadly. Usually the illness sets in an average of 3 to 4 days after swallowing the germ. Most people get diarrhea, often bloody, severe stomach cramps, and vomiting. For most, recovery will occur within a week, but more severe cases last longer.
We're discussing these various bacteria. I think we've been through salmonella and E. coli, Ken. So now I guess we ought to deal with listeria, which is, in my experience anyway, the strongest of all of them.
Well, listeria, not in the news this week, but often in the news. It's a bacteria. It's found in soil, water, and animal feces. Humans typically get infected by consuming raw vegetables that have been contaminated from the soil or from contaminated manure used as fertilizer. You can also contaminate animal meat, unpasteurized milk, or foods made with unpasteurized milk. Certain processed foods like soft cheeses, hot dogs, and deli meats that have contaminated after processing. And unborn babies contact listeria from their mother via the placenta. And the people who are at biggest risk for this are pregnant women and people who have weak immune systems. They're at highest risk of contracting listeria infection.
Mm-hmm. So all of them, their presence really, there's not any vaccine against this kind of stuff. You need to just have a strong immune system or try to avoid, but pretty hard. And it'll be harder, by the way, as an aside, there's a portion of the Farm Bill, Ken, that is aimed at eliminating the ability of farmers to sell their fresh food over state lines. This is a complete is a screwing of the family farmer at the hands of the big ag businesses trying to keep, and it's made it through committee and into this bill, which if enacted will keep farmers like marijuana. You can't, the only reason I'm using the example is because marijuana, according to the feds, is illegal. So you can grow it in states where it's legal, but you can't transport it across state lines to another state. You get caught, you'll go to jail. And that's what the penalty here. If you buy corn and bring it to your house, you buy corn in Illinois and you bring it across the border into Iowa and eat it at your home, you could go to jail. That's how invasive these big ag businesses have become. It's beyond stupidity. It's un-American. It's so atrociously outrageous. I can't begin to tell you. And this is the kind of stuff that's happening to the food supply. That's why there's so many problems with the food that we have, because there's these big companies, that grow the raspberry, blueberry, strawberry outfit, Driscoll's. They grow tens of millions of these things in water, and they don't even grow it in the soil. They're all hydroponic. And, you're not getting any benefit. It just looks good. The kind of food that we're getting is really awful. It really is. This is a dangerous precedent. And so the worse the food, the more the chances of things like E. coli and listeria and salmonella. We never used to hear stories like this when you were a kid. Did you ever hear any stories like this? Your mother was a nurse. Your father, what did you ever have any exposure to this that you know of?
Well, my mother cooked everything thoroughly and scrubbed the raw vegetables and kept a pretty clean kitchen. So, it didn't occur in our kitchen.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's get to something else that's going on here. This is, we're talking about the badness of E. coli, et cetera, et cetera. There seems to be a problem with green tea. And I don't know whether it's the tea itself or the supplements that are made that proclaim themselves to be green tea supplements that we get capsules. What's the bottom line here, Ken?
Yeah, there's a warning from the European Food Safety Authority, not the FDA, but I guess this is pretty much the European equivalent. And the European Food Safety Authority warns this week, Doug, that taking high doses of supplements containing green tea extracts may be associated with liver damage. Tea infusions, however, is used for brewed tea are still considered safe. Instant tea drinks are also fine as they contain lower levels of the antioxidants naturally present in green tea. Consuming too many of these antioxidants can be harmful, according to the European Food Safety Authority, which is why the amount contained in supplements can have a harmful effect on the liver.
Why? Because there's too much? Is that what this is?
That's what is the opinion of the European Food Safety Authority.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
What do I think? This is not an area that I'm an expert in, and I have to, and apparently the people who are experts are giving their opinion, and they're talking from examples, and, I have no reason to doubt it.
All right, so what happens if you enhance your... in this case, your kidney, liver, or any of these things, there are a lot of things that cleanse them. I take liver. I I've had somewhat liver, you know, you've looked at my blood results. Sometimes it's a little bit of an issue with my liver. I take supplements because I think I take supplements and that impacts your liver. And therefore, you take a supplement to keep your liver functioning well. You wonder which, what are we chasing here?
They're not talking about the offset. They're not talking about some of the supplements that have been claimed to help the liver. They're talking about taking this specific green tea high supplement for the other benefits that it may have an unexpected harmful effect on the liver. That's what they're saying.
All right. So isn't that the case, though, when you overdo anything?
Well, too much of anything can be bad, but here they're pointing it out that when you take it in the regular beverage dose, it's okay, but in concentrated form, it can harm the liver. That's their,
a certain amount
their claim.
Of common sense, I think, involved in this sort of thing. So there you've had the facts. You got Ken's opinion on what to do or not to do. Maybe you drink the green tea and never mind the taking the supplements. I'm going to tie one of the stories, Ken, into an experience that I've had myself. I have been maybe in denial over the years on the farm. I have whacked my head any number of times on equipment and circumstances. I've told you some of the stories. I've told some of the stories on the air, and I've sort of passed them off because I've never really had anything that lasted. And the other day, I was getting out of a closet in my house, and I knocked my head left side, the back rear left side of my head on the ceiling, and it stunned me for a second. I didn't think it was that hard. It is a hard ceiling. And then didn't seem to be anything that was lasting. And then yesterday when I woke up, I got out of bed and I didn't sleep well during the night. And my left leg had bothered me, tingled and kind of sore and I don't know, all kinds of stuff that was weird. I had ringing in my ears and the left side of my face, jaw, head they're tender. So I wondered, because I know that you've studied something here in one of the journals about concussions, so you want to tell me something about mine, and then we'll tell the story about what the research has led people to believe about concussions.
Well, yours would concern me a little bit, and I hope you have a boring couple of days after all that ringing in the ears, and if that associated limb sensation is related to this, I'd be a little concerned. But did you do anything also independently to the legs when this happened?
No, not that I can remember. But I am going to go see the guy that I see up here that you know.
Yeah, you do need an exam to
check
this out. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's just funny because it almost feels like, because I've been exercising more, I wonder if there's some nerve that I twisted also in my back, if that would affect
legs. You may have done that independent of the traumatic brain injury that you just experienced. But the news this week that you were talking about that everyone needs to know about, this is out of the medical journal Neurology this week, is that if you've ever had a mild concussion, that's traumatic brain injury, your risk of developing Parkinson's disease goes up by 56%. And before you panic, it's not as bad as it sounds, because these new findings do not mean that everyone who's ever had a concussion is doomed to develop the degenerative neurologic disorder that affects coordination of movement. Because the lifetime risk of Parkinson's is probably about 1% to 2% for all of us, so a greater than 50% increase in that risk is not as alarming as it sounds.
Well, there are these, we've heard, I think, in the last few weeks, stories about one and done in other areas. You could be exposed to something just once, like one night's bad sleep, and you could end up getting Alzheimer's. I mean, I think we talked about that earlier on.
Talk about that this week.
Sensationally, yeah. I mean, is it sensationalism?
No, this is from the National Institutes of Health, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences just this week, Doug, that losing just one night's sleep causes an immediate increase in beta amyloid, proteins in the brain that clump together to form brain plaques, characteristic of Alzheimer's disease. This new study is the first to show that sleep helps to clear beta amyloid, a metabolic waste product present in the fluid between cells from the human brain. And the bottom line is, if you're sleepy during the day, you're at increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease.
What, sleepy during the day that leads you to taking a nap?
If you're sleepy during the day, in any way, you're an increase. Yeah. You're having accumulation of that beta amyloid.
As I get relaxed after the pressure of being on the air is over, and I kind of want to take a nap for a half hour or so.
Well, you're probably, hopefully, clearing it, but that study's yet to be done.
Really? All right, Dr. Ken.